Welcome to the Natural History Cupboard. Come on in.
And welcome back to the Natural History Cupboard podcast, the place where the weird and wonderful parts of the natural world come together. I'm your host, Gareth, and with me as always is my co-host, Aaron.
Happy New Year.
Yes, it's our first show of the year. We're back, people. It's been a couple of weeks, I'd say.
Has been.
In many ways than one. I'm still feeling pretty ropey. I've had cold and flu pretty much over the entirety of our Christmas week, Christmas break.
Mm.
What about you, Aaron? How are you coping?
I'm doing pretty well. The only thing I can complain about, and it might be a bit soppy, is that my partner and my daughter have gone to visit family over in Spain. So I miss those two, and I'm looking forward to picking them up at the airport next week. But other than
you're
that,
dancing around the house, you got the whole place to yourself.
Well, I'm enjoying I'm getting to complete Spider-Man finally on PS4. And I've also managed to get a couple things done around the house that are a bit difficult to do because obviously my daughter wants me to play with her and I'd rather go play with her than do it. So
that's fair.
So that's you know, I've been productive and I've also enjoyed myself. I've made the best of it. But yeah, I would be lying if I said I didn't miss them. The house is very quiet and it lacks laughter.
Fair enough. Well, you've been up to any wildlife-based adventures over your Christmas period?
So I just had something. So this is going to be a bit of a tease, and I'm sorry for this, but I've just had something confirmed to me at work that I'm going to get to do, which I will talk about. I'll talk about at a later date on the podcast. So, but that's kind of related. But I can't say anything about it yet. I don't think I should anyway. But other than that, not a great deal. So for Christmas I got a new fossil, a really nice one, polished.
Nice.
It's an ammonite and it's split vertically in half. So it's a lovely ammonite. Or is it a nautilus? I think it's a nautilus actually. But it's split down the middle and it looks lovely on the outside. It's pearlescent. And then you can just hold the two halves of it and you get to see inside. And it's like a geode inside. It's really, really pretty. And also I also got Steve Brissett's job. I got Steve Brissett's book, The Rise and the Fall of the Dinosaurs. I've only read
very good book.
I've only read the opening so far, because I started it last night. But I'm excited to get stuck into that. I might do a little book review for our Patreons once I'm done.
Hmm. Oh, very cool.
Did you get anything like kind of related to for Christmas?
Well, yes. I mean, I got a nice T-shirt that's it's got like an Attenborough quote on it.
Oh yeah. Come on, Alan, you can't move on. You have to tell me what the Attenborough quote is.
I can't remember what it is, to be honest, at the moment. I wouldn't be doing it justice if I just tried to remember.
That's fair enough. There's a lot of things that Attenborough has said that are T-shirt worthy.
Yeah, I got Lego plants.
Lots yes, of I saw. Lego I plants. Saw your. I
very
saw
nice.
The photo you sent me, very cool. Very, very yeah. Cool.
I've been given money to go shark diving or, you know, swimming with blue sharks off the coast. So I'm going to be looking at sorting that out. So that hopefully we'll take a camera with us and do that.
Hmm.
That was on New Year's Day was bird watching using a GoPro and hiding in the kitchen. So, you know, doing it remotely. So basically having the GoPro set up so that I could sit comfortably inside and just watch from a screen, which some of those pictures have gone up on our social media. So
Yeah, a couple of a woodpecker. That was nice.
Yeah. Well, the intention was to have it out for the fox that turns up. However, I have very much learnt the limitations of GoPros, and that is light. You can't do them in the dark. Well, you certainly can't do my one in the dark. But a lovely shot of nothingness, knowing that there was even a fox right in front of it as well.
Do you have a do you have a camera trap?
I used to.
Well, I will. More, if I will dig mine out, and you can borrow it for a week or two.
Mm. Well, yeah, I'm gonna see if I get it. This isn't in my garden; it's in the parents-in-law garden. But yeah, they've got some pretty good wildlife turning up in theirs. Yeah. Well, it seems like we've both had some relatively interesting bits and pieces, and let's kick things off. Let's launch into the New Year's news.
It's the news!
Right, well, we're into this week's news. Aaron, take us away.
Yeah, every week we are inundated with news coming out of the weird and wonderful world of natural sciences. And though we are but a small team, we want you, our fellow cupboard dwellers, to be kept up to date on the good, the bad, the extraordinary, the scary, the exhilarating, and the new in this new year, I suppose. So let's open up our natural history cupboard news reel and dive on in for the first time in 2024. And I'm going to take it away first with an article from Live Science, and that reads as follows. 72-million-year-old blue dragon unearthed in Japan is unlike anything we've ever seen, experts say. So a never-before-seen mosasaur has been unearthed in Japan. The Pacific predator was about the size of a great white shark and near-perfect in preservation. The Megaraptorigius wakayamiensis, or great-winged blue dragon, which is far easier for me to say, is unique among its peers for displaying exceptionally large rear flippers, and they are huge, and a dorsal fin, which is something that is never seen in mosasaurs. So really, really interesting new find. Really quite exciting, too.
Hmm. I think that got overshadowed by the pliosaur that was found in the UK at about the same time around last year now. From the BBC, I have got Charity Creates World's First Otter Ambulance. This is the news that the UK Otter Trust, which is headed up by its founder, Dave Webb, has now got a otter ambulance. It's basically a four-wheel drive kitted out with all of the equipment that they need for being able to get to and rescue otters throughout North Devon, as well as other parts of the country. So, fantastic news.
Yeah, it's great news. My next article comes to us from fizz.org, and it's the new reptile on the block, new iguana species discovered in China. Officially described in the journal Zookies as new to science, Wang's garden lizard was originally part of the species complex Calotes versicolor. But recent studies of the specimens collected from South China found that they belong to a new undescribed species and two subspecies. For now, the populations are not considered threatened, but researchers do stress that the habitat is fragmented and needs attention.
Hmm.
Always nice to have a new iguana.
Yeah. I've got from the Telegraph, the RNLI, which is the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, turns down donation from Irish Fox Hunt. The lifeboat charity tells a group in Dungarvan it will only accept donations for the organization in which it feels keeps with its values of the institution, which is really good. Basically, it means that they're putting morals and values over money, which is seldom seen a lot these days, but really, really good to see from especially a really fantastic charity that does an awful lot of good work for people.
Yeah, it is the well, it's the very definition of anti-corruption, isn't it?
Exactly.
Fizz.org for our next one. Newborn southern resident orca spotted in Puget Sound. Cast your minds back over at least the last two seasons of the podcast, and you may remember me talking on a few occasions about the endangered southern resident orcas in pods J, K, and L, whom have been suffering from low birth rates, high infant mortality, and low Chinook salmon population numbers in the Salish Sea. Factors so detrimental to orca pod survivability that we discussed the increasing cougars actually swimming between the islands to hunt in the absence of the orcas patrolling the waters in between, because they've got no reason to be frightened of being picked off themselves. Well, good news now, because the J-Pod has welcomed a healthy calf born to a female who hadn't yet given birth in her lifetime. The addition to J-Pod comes as a great follow-up to the two born to L-Pod over the summer. So, there is hope.
Oh, really good. From the Smithsonian magazine, I've got alligators are now known to be the largest species ever to regrow severed limbs.
Oh,
this is from research that young gators can sprout new tails that can help them reach up to 9 inches, helping them ultimately survive through their juvenile years. Hmm. Small reptiles like lizards and geckos are famous for being able to sprout new limbs if they lose body parts. Not all of them, I'd like to point out. And regenerate new limbs isn't exactly the same as the original, but it's enough to give the animal an ability to survive. Despite also being reptiles, little was known whether or not alligators could regenerate their thick, massive tails. Alligators can reach up to 15 feet in length and weigh up to 1,000 pounds, so regrowing a tail is no small feat for them. But in a surprising new discovery, scientists found that young American alligators can actually regrow their tails up to 9 inches, or about 18% of their body length in total. So basically, I don't think they're going out and chopping off the tails of alligators, but finding ones that have obviously proven how good they are at surviving. Mm. Alligators, like most crocodilians, are masters of survival and can take hits that would kill a lot of other animals. So yet another reason why alligators are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they're really impressive animals. I think they're in the family of incredibly interesting species. I think they're second only to saltwater crocodiles for me. I do love salties and alligators.
Yeah, they're my two favorite crocodilians.
But yeah, that about wraps it up for this week's newsreel installment. Remember, if you guys at home have news articles or topics of interest that you think we should cover, send them in. And you can use any of the usual ways to contact us. You might even want to try some of the unusual ways of contacting us, such as rumbling really loud in water like an alligator. you might well see your article or topic covered here or in our main discussion topic. And with that said, Gareth, you have this week's topic.
Yes. I have got, from The Guardian, some good news to start the year off with. And it's how a very own 21st century peasants' revolt took on the royals over rewilding and has won. So it's probably no small secret that the UK is not exactly a massive area. There's usually quite a few maps that you see of the UK and most of Europe, in fact, fitting inside like the state of Texas, or quite easily the majority of Europe and the UK fitting easily within the size of Australia. We're not exactly a massive island. We measure around 60 million acres in total, and that's home to around 67 million people. So there is something rather odd about this. It basically means if we were to be really egalitarian about this, we could in fact have one person, one vote, and 1 acre if we were truly progressive and did things in that way. However, that is not reality. The reality that we live in is, in fact, that most of the land that is in the UK is actually owned by very few people. No shocks there. And even less of a shock is that, in fact, a mind-bogglingly large amount of the land is owned by the British royal family. So taken together, just two Britons that happen to be members of the royal family, a certain Charles and William Windsor, own and derive a significant share of profits from their more than 850,000 acres of land, as well as foreshore as well. Now, this feudally formidable figure is medieval in its, acquisition, I suppose, and also its absurdity. And it can only be understood through comparison to an area of twice the size of Greater London, or about half again bigger than the area of the Lake District or Snowdonia, or as it should be known, Irrawaddy National Park. So imagine owning the entirety of the Lake District, or twice the size of Greater London. And of course, getting all of the money from that as well. And keep in mind, Aaron, that you and I and every British taxpayer also pays money to be the royals as well.
Mm. If ever there was an argument for being able to choose where your taxes go.
Well, definitely.
I'm not a royalist. I find them to be very, it's a very undemocratic and archaic concept to me.
Definitely. Well, in 2021, a tiny unfunded group of activists decided to go and do something about this. They started a sort of 21st century peasants' revolt. It does feel more and more these days like we are just peasants, but hey-ho. they basically started a rewilding revolt, which they called Wildcard. Using evenings and weekends, they travelled the country, mobilising local people to come together and demand that the royal land be rewilded and basically aid the long-term rewilding efforts of 50% of Britain, which is a brilliant idea. But why on earth should this matter? And basically, it doesn't to a lot of people who own a large amount of land because it is used for farming, also for game hunting and things like that. So it basically is land that is, in their mind, best kept as it is, treeless, speciesless, and just used
barren.
To basically, yeah. This land is burnt to basically drive down everything that isn't wanted. It's used for sport, it's drained, it's overgrazed, it's fertilized, it's polluted, and contaminates the local wildlife around. And it basically has led to a lot of people obviously not being happy with this. But despite speeches, charters, TV shows, nature-themed coronation invitations, and replantable Christmas tree initiatives, all of which are basically a bit of royal greenwashing in a lot of ways, the land itself has still remained pretty much unchanged. However, with a little bit of legal help and also by a little bit of celebrity backing from the likes of Chris Packham, as well as hundreds of school children, who threw down a 5-meter sculpted medieval gauntlet, a literal 5-meter sculpted medieval gauntlet, to Buckingham House to basically help kick this whole thing off and to get people interested. They've actually won the backing of more than 100 climate scientists, and eventually they managed to get over 175,000 signatures on a petition. And incredibly, this is the most absolutely incredible bit, it seems to be working. This summer, the Duchy of Cornwall Estate, which is one of the estates owned by the royals, has agreed to petition to expand Dartmoor's temperate rainforest, a really, really crucial area of national importance. The Crown Estate announced for the first time ever there will be beaver releases, and now the most unthinkable, even the King's beloved Balmoral Estate, which was once a bastion of blood sports, is set to get its first rewilding project. Now, this is considered a Lilliputian step and could all fizzle to nothing, but it is an absolutely vital step, if you ask me, to basically get the country back on track when it comes to rewilding. If we don't have the idea of every person having an acre or, you know, that sort of way of doing it, if only a few people like the royals own majority of the land, we should be pushing them to basically use their land for the country. If they are the ones who represent this country as much as possible, then we should be making it clear that our country should be as glorious as it could be, you know, in a natural sense. They've got all this land. And yes, obviously some of it does have to be used for farming. That's fair enough. But they have a good percentage of it that could be turned back into rewilded states and help Britain's failing biodiversity. So hopefully this is a step in the right direction and a reason to be a bit more pro-royal, I suppose. I'm not exactly massive. I don't really care about them, to be honest. It's sort of an outdated institution in my mind, but I'm not going to be one way or the other, really. But if they start doing this, I will definitely be more in favour of them. So there we go, Aaron. A good news story to start the year off on. Hopefully we can see Dartmoor's temperate forests being expanded.
Yeah, I hope so. I do fear that places where they own lands, such as Balmoral, that was used for sport hunting. I do fear that rewilding it. Well, let's just say that I hope that by rewilding, it's genuinely meant as rewilding and not just restocking for further blood sport. And I use sport in that term very loosely, because sport suggests that both sides have agreed to this and have equal opportunity to win, which is obviously not the case.
Right. Well, shall we move on from this good news into our first creature feature of the year? And I think you've got this one, Aaron. So let's go and have a look.
Bear with the pandemonium.
It's the creature feature.
Right, well, we're into our first creature feature of the year. Aaron, what is it? Take us out. Let's hear what you've got. Let's start the year off on a good one.
I think it's a good one to start the year off. It's a bit of a strange feeling, however, because we're opening up New Year with this species, obviously. Because it's a bit of a weird one, because as the cupboard opens 2024 by welcoming the giant panda to our collection, much of the rest of the world closed 2023 out with the mass departure of giant pandas from zoological collections around the world. Largely due to increasingly fractious political relations. And in this regard, the panda finds itself, I think, in a genuinely unique position. But more on that later. I just thought it was interesting and a bit weird that we're starting 2024 with the species that much of the world finished 2023 with. Did you knew about them going, yeah?
Oh, I knew about the ones in Edinburgh going, but I wasn't aware that any others had been returned to sender, as it were.
Oh yes, I have mentioned it before in the news, and but I'll kind of retread some of that ground now. Now, I will say from the outset, I'm just going to do a very quick summary of physical features. I naively took to thinking that everyone knows what a panda bear looks like, because they're just that well renowned. But it wasn't just for accessibility's sake that I decided to include a description, however brief. I feel quite strongly that there may come a time sooner than we think when pandas may in fact not live among us anymore. Or at the very least, they won't. They like is the situation now. They won't be in zoological collections, so people won't be able to see them in person and connect with them on that level. You just see them through documentaries and such. So yeah, I thought I would include a little description that I'll keep short, but just for posterity's sake. So the popular animal adopts the general bear form, with a clean white coat that is broken by pitch black fur over the eyes, ears, limbs and the shoulders. The pattern may not look more than just a beautiful result of evolution, but it does appear to serve the purpose of year-round camouflage for all seasons. So in winter, the white blends the animal into the snow and the black breaks up the image of the bear, kind of like disruptive pattern material on military uniform and stuff. And in summer, the black acts as a form of crypsis camouflage, again, breaking up the bear's image, but also hiding the animal in the dappled shade of the forest it haunts. The paws on the forelimbs are armed with 5 finger digits and 1 opposable thumb digit. So that's kind of weird and interesting that they have 6 fingers to function with. And in closing for this description, they are a relatively small bear. I think it's actually like the second from smallest, with only the sun bears being smaller. Now, adults measure around 1.2 to 1.9 meters, including a tail of about 10 to 15 centimeters, which, by the way, is the second longest tail in the bear family, actually. And they stand in at around 60 to 90 centimeters, paw pad to shoulder. So not a big bear at all. Gareth, have you ever seen one in person?
So the ones at Edinburgh.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. Do you want me to give my opinion on them?
On the ones at Edinburgh or just pandas
just
in general?
Pandas in general, really.
I think generally speaking, most zookeepers have a unfairly negative opinion of them. But I do understand why, but let me hear what you think.
Well, I wouldn't say it's negative. But yeah, I went there to Edinburgh Zoo when I was up that way for something else. Just stopped in to go and see them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was relatively quiet. It was still at the point where they had someone sort of counting people in and counting people out as they went into that area.
Yeah.
And I can remember the woman saying, as I came back out, "Oh, what did you think?" And I went, "Yeah, they're all right. Kind of boring, really." And she went, "Are you a zookeeper by any chance?" And I went, "Yeah, how'd you know?" Every zookeeper that's come through has gone, "Yeah, they're kind of boring." And from an invertebrate keeper point of view, yeah, they're not my favorite bear species. They're interesting. They have a really fascinating sort of lifestyle. But if you'd get me to pick a bear, it's going to have to either be sun bear or brown bear. Far more interesting.
Okay.
Always been. I mean, those are the two bears I have worked with, and sun bears. Sun bears are so much fun to work with.
I've not worked with any bears actually. But if you got me to pick a favorite bear, it's the polar bear. Sun bears would be a close second, but yeah, polar bears.
They're pretty
for me.
Cool. Pandas are interesting. Who's got the longest tail? Then you said they've got the second longest tail.
Oh, I can't remember. I looked this up as a little bonus fact, and I can't remember what it is. So I'll have to Google that in a bit and work out.
I will do that whilst we go.
Go for it. I actually. So yeah, to describe pandas to people, or at least pandas. Once they're kind of full grown, because young pandas are a lot of fun to watch. They roll around, they wrestle, they're clumsy as anything. They're a lot of fun, and also they're energetic. So younger pandas are very fun to watch. Adult pandas, however, like the ones you mentioned at Edinburgh Zoo, they are very sedentary, very inactive. And we're going to get into why in a bit, because as everybody probably already knows, pandas don't have the best choice in dietary habits. And because of this, they just lack energy. But what I would say is, whilst watching adult pandas isn't particularly fun, I mean, they're a bit like the lizards of the bear family. They just kind of
sit
there. Oh,
no, let's not
there.
Sully lizards.
Well, they're similar to lizards in that they just kind of sit there a lot of the time. Whilst they are very sedentary like that, and their behavior, like in front of you, isn't particularly interesting, their physiology is incredible, and their lifestyle is really interesting. And I would also say that the political intrigue that surrounds them is also just like really fascinating to follow. But getting back to the animal itself, I think that's a good enough start on the description front. Like I said, most people listening weekly will know what a panda bear looks like, and I included it more for accessibility and posterity, basically. So what do they do? I did mention that they're quite interesting when they do stuff. And pandas are, of course, well known and often mocked as the carnivore that eats bamboo exclusively. So it's a good moment to remind everyone that a carnivore is not an animal that eats meat, strangely enough, not necessarily. Only an animal that has evolved into families that are adapted to eat meat, i.e. they have carnassial teeth, the slicing teeth used to shear flesh. So to be clear, the panda is a carnivore, as it belongs to the order Carnivora, but its diet is best described as folivorous, meaning that it eats leaves and shoots. Now, this diet is not particularly an effective one, especially for a carnivore. Most herbivores that fall into the folivore category tend to have exceptionally long digestive tracts to aid in the breakdown of cellulose and lignin. And pandas, quite simply, do not have this setup. They are very much carnivorous if you look at their digestive apparatus and their genes. So they lack the ability to break down that cellulose and lignin that I spoke about, meaning that they can't efficiently access the nutrients that they need for survival. In fact, they get the bulk of their nutrients from starch and hemicelluloses. But the most important ingredient in their diet is the bamboo's young shoots. These are rich in starch and have up to 32% protein content. So really vital to a panda bear's longevity and nutritional health. So how does the panda exist on such meager sustenance? Physiologically speaking, the panda's unique digit array on the forelimb paws, like I said, they've got five fingers and one thumb on each of the forelimb paws. This allows the bears to tightly grasp specific shoots, allowing them to get every last bit of the meal and not accidentally miss out on nutrients like they would if they were just, you know, going along trimming the grass like a grazing animal would. They can actually, you know, grip it and make sure they get everything into them. Behaviorally, on the other hand, the bears go full gut load mode during the shoot season. So this is the season where new shoots start to grow in the bamboo thickets. This lasts from April until August. And during this time, they consume up to 14 kilograms of bamboo per day, and they pile on the weight and get life lovely and hench and hefty, basically. And this gorge feeding frenzy sees them through a much rougher time once August ends and the nutrients are much harder to come by. An additional behavior to aid in the digestion of vegetation is through the consumption of their mother's feces after birth. So they're born with sterile intestines, and these are then need to be introduced to the gut bacteria of their mothers because it basically sets them up for a life eating what is technically the wrong food for them to be eating. This is quite similar to what we spoke about with koalas. Was it called a fecal pap that the koalas eat? Yeah, so very similar. And koalas and pandas, or marsupials, I should say, and panda bears are not the only animals that do this. There are plenty of other animals that do it. But it's particularly important for marsupials, as it is particularly important for panda bears, because obviously marsupials, they don't have the same, you know, the placental development, and also they don't have the same, you know, like milk quality as other mammals would get. And on the panda side of things, pandas aren't eating the food that they should be eating, and in fact it's this gut bacteria is what actually allows them to eat this stuff and get nutrients out of it. So without it, they'd be even more useless. Very interesting way of developing to be able to have the diet they have. Basically, these guys have haunted the bamboo forest for millions of years, and the adaptations that they display are unique, fascinating, and essentially they're necessary to their survival here. Now, I say millions of years. Where does the weirdest member of Team Bear fit on the family tree? Can you hazard a guess, Gareth?
I think they're on their own little offshoot, but are they closely related to, I want to say, black bears?
They
not
are
North actually... American ones, but the sort of forerunner to that sort of the South, you know, South American, the Asiatic black bears.
Yeah, I knew where you were going with it, but they are on their own shelf, their own kind of offshoot branch. But you may be interested to learn that pandas are the most basal member of the bears that are around today, meaning that...
That doesn't surprise me.
No, it might surprise other people then. They are a species that split earlier than all the other species that are around today, some 19 million years ago from the bear's common ancestor. They're essentially living fossils, whom are equidistant from all other extant bear species. So, and that in itself is fascinating. Their classification did, in fact, actually cause some confusion when people were first considering like what a panda bear is and where it fits and things. So primitive are they, and so uniquely adapted to their lifestyle, that they almost resemble somewhere between an ursid and a musteloid. They very nearly were lumped in with the musteloids, actually, but molecular studies carried out in the 80s saw the conclusion that pandas were, in fact, true bears belonging to the Ursidae family. And speaking of families, pandas aren't particularly in favor of them. which may come as a surprise to nobody, pandas are generally solitary animals with a bit of a randomized activity schedule. They have clearly defined territories, and females are particularly intolerant of each other. They do, however, communicate, mostly through urine spraying and tree clawing, you know, standard olfactory scent marking stuff. Now, this scent marking activity essentially uploads information about the owner to the surface upon which it is being marked. Passersby catch the scent and examine it to basically download that information, which would then inform them of the marker's age, gender, individuality, dominance over territory, sexual status, size, and if this scent is actually on somebody's home. Now, how the scent is left on these surfaces differs from male to female. So males will lift their hind legs and rub their bums on the surface. Whereas females, we're all guilty of that, right? On the other hand, the ladies, they squat and rub their genitals on it. So, yeah, there's that. These scents are what allows individuals to eventually find mates during their very brief breeding season. And hopefully, this will lead to cubs being born in time. So, pandas reach maturity at between the ages of 4 and 8 years old. Their season falls between March and May, but the female will be in season just once in that period and only for 2 to 3 days. So clearly this is an animal that doesn't like families. Population lasts between 30 seconds and 5 minutes. And if successful, a gestation period of 95 to 160 days will commence. The pair will then go their separate ways as soon as the female comes out of estrus, because like I said, pandas don't like families. Yeah. At the end of this gestation period, half of all pregnancies result in twins. And this gets a little bit sad and dark, I'm afraid, because only one cub will ever survive. Pandas do not store fat, and so females can't produce enough milk to sustain two cubs. She'll essentially choose to feed the stronger of the twins, and the other will literally be left to starve, quite mercilessly. Now, they are born pink and defenseless, and the cubs will also be born without teeth. They'll also be blind and weigh a mere 90 grams. So yeah, defenseless is definitely the right word for it. And they are proportionately the smallest baby of all placental mammals.
They are tiny compared to the adult.
Yeah. Yes, they are, like, to say they're a fraction of the size would be comically understating the nature of the situation. Have you ever seen that video of the
is it the baby panda sneezing?
The baby panda sneezes and it scares the mom. But she's like huge compared to the baby. It's very funny. So these babies, they'll nurse up to 14 times a day for half an hour at a time, and they won't start eating solids until they're about 6 months. But mother's milk is still a main source of nutrition at this time too. During those first 6 months, however, the cubs will undergo several changes. Firstly, where black fur will eventually grow, the skin actually turns grey. But where the white fur grows, the fur itself may actually grow out pink. And this is due to a chemical reaction that takes place between their fur and the saliva on mum's tongue as she's grooming the baby. They'll also begin to play with their mum and wrestle during this period. And like I said, infant to young adult pandas are exceptionally funny to watch. People watch cat videos on YouTube. You could just as easily watch young panda videos. They're incredibly inquisitive, very intelligent, but exceptionally clumsy, I think, is the only way of putting it. Like, disastrously, cataclysmically clumsy. They will be on top of a platform that any other bear, particularly sun bears, would have no issue with. And some bears will roll around this platform. It might even be a dynamic platform that the sun bear could be on. And it'll roll around and it'll be very entertaining to watch and very impressive because it will keep its balance. Panda bears don't. Pandas will be on the most solid platform you can find them. It can be as wide as an entire city, and a panda will still find a way to fall off.
I think that might be my spirit animal then. I'm very good at falling over on flat ground.
They are incredible animals to watch when they're at that age. They're very funny. But yeah, 6 months later, at At 1 year of age, the cub will now weigh 45 kilograms and will stay with mum until about 2 years old. Pandas, like I said, I mentioned just now that they become sexually mature between 4 and 8 years of age. Well, they'll remain reproductively active until they're about 20 years old. So they have quite a while where they can pass on their genes. However, aside from kind of antisocial behavior, though not quite as bad as koalas, I should say, pandas are neither particularly social in terms of their activity periods either. I did mention that they've got kind of uncommon activity habits, but they're most active during June, as well as from November through to March, but they're less active during the late summer and autumn. They also don't seem to fit into categories for their activity, such as diurnal, nocturnal, or crepuscular. Instead, they have three peaks in activity, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one around midnight, all broken up with long durations of inactivity and sleep, which is no doubt what you would have seen at Edinburgh Zoo with their pandas.
Yeah, they're pretty much asleep.
Now, this is primarily due to the fact that, as I've mentioned previously, their diet is rather lackluster, and so they must sustain energy through inactivity and consume vast amounts of bamboo. They are also pretty unbothered by predators, particularly once adult. Though big cats still will pose a threat when they try it, but generally they're pretty safe day or night. Now, these habits in behavior and activity are very much dictated by the sunlight and its provision of warmth on colder days. Like many subtropical mammalian species, pandas will migrate to warmer areas of the territory, and they won't hibernate. In fact, they never even make or own a permanent den, opting instead, despite their mostly territorial habits and incredible clumsiness, to climb into tree hollows for shelter, or maybe even a rock crevice. Now, when it gets really cold, they're actually known to roll around and coat themselves in manure to help maintain their body temperature. So a very smelly but effective way of keeping warm through the winter. Now, we're going to kind of take a step away from the animal itself here, because I want to circle back around to something I touched on earlier, something called panda diplomacy. Now, since the Tang Dynasty, in China, giant pandas have been gifted to other countries in an effort to butter up political partners. During the early 80s, however, 1984 to be precise, I think, the nature of panda diplomacy actually changed a little bit. Pandas were now considered the property of China and were no longer given as gifts to political partners, but were loaned to them instead. The loans spanned 10 years with the option to extend, and were intended to foster something called guanqi. I think that's how you pronounce it. Guanqi. I think it's guanqi. If there are any Chinese listeners, please write in to us and let me know if I've pronounced that wrong, so I can correct it. But guanqi is essentially the Mandarin term for trust. China wanted to promote its own image and encourage mutual partnerships with the receiving nations. So how much would it cost to loan a panda from China? Well, if you're in America, it'll cost you about $1 million per bear per year on the basis of having a trade deal with said recipient, and under the caveat that any and all cubs born are returned to China before their fourth birthday. So to give you an example, I worked briefly at RZSS Edinburgh Zoo whilst the pandas were there, though I didn't work with the animals themselves, unfortunately. I would have loved to, but I didn't get the opportunity. Scotland actually obtained the pandas for Edinburgh Zoo in 2011, which was following China and Scotland signing an oil deal. Similarly, Australia received their pandas after deals were made with China for Australia to help them out with uranium. So, it's a very, very political thing that, getting a panda. But as I mentioned a few weeks back in the news and reiterated at the top of this creature feature right at the start, the pandas are mostly leaving for China again, and apparently en masse, as 2023 saw the return of pandas housed in the UK, the USA and Australia, to name just three countries. Now, in some cases, the loans have expired. However, usually the extension of the loans are really easily obtained, and it's mutually beneficial between China and the recipient country. So there's no real reason why why they couldn't have extended in theory. But the decision to not renew the Panda loans before expiration does, however, coincide with the increased tension between China and many of these countries, especially the USA. For one thing, not only is the relationship between China and the USA a little bit tense right now, but I mean, if you follow the news, you know that Beijing is not particularly impressed with the US giving a lot of support, shall we say, to Taiwan. And there's tensions between China and Taiwan, obviously.
That's a bit of an understatement.
Yeah. So, furthermore, it wouldn't be the first time, actually, that toys were thrown out of prams and panda diplomacy ended, or at least was put on hold. And both the USA and Malaysia can attest to this. Do you remember when first time we worked together, I left, I went to live in Barcelona for a bit, and then I went traveling in Asia. Do you remember just before I went out, that Malaysian passenger plane went down, just disappeared.
Yep. Yeah. Right?
There was a lot of tension between Malaysia and China because of that. And that is what delayed China giving Malaysia the pandas. Very, very political situations surround these panda loans. Now, with all that being said, whilst animals have always been gifted between rulers of various nation states, dating all the way back to ancient Egypt and probably further, I do find that the panda diplomacy interpretation on this practice is a very, it's uniquely long-lived and actually just generally unique. I can't think of any other animal that is, as a species, not as an individual, tied directly to the whims of politicians and their agendas. It is a really, really interesting situation that pandas have going on. I really can't think of. Can you think of any other animal that is treated as a political gift?
No,
these days?
I think the only thing that might come close would be koalas a while back. But no, Australia is not too bad with it. It is definitely just the pandas that have this uniquely weird sort of side attached to them.
That's basically the end of the creature feature. There's a lot more to be said on pandas, which I'll find other avenues to do at some point with this podcast, but I thought for now, that's especially with how heavy the politics of it all is, I thought that's enough for you all to digest on pandas for the evening.
Do you want to know the... first off, I've got the answer to which bear has the longest tail.
Oh, yes, please.
It's the sloth bear.
Oh, yeah,
comes
fair
in
enough.
Slightly longer than the pandas. The other fact that I've got for you, or the fact that I have for you, Aaron, is you know that it's not the original panda.
No, I know. I can even tell you how many years after the original panda that the giant panda was actually named, I think.
Yeah, go on then. Yeah. Because
you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but basically the red panda is the original panda,
and also the best version.
and the giant panda was first named giant panda, roughly I think 40 years afterwards.
Oh wow, yeah, the red panda was discovered long before that, which it's odd if you looked at the two of them and went, yeah, they're basically the same thing, even though they're not. There's always been that flip-flopping of where it sits, even though it's in its own little group, the red panda. But I wouldn't see any real similarity between the two of them at all, really, to look at.
No,
them.
I mean, there's...
To give them both the name panda, I would not see a giant panda and think, yes, that reminds me of a red panda.
No, if I was seeing them both for the first time and neither of them were named, I was an explorer and I looked at them both, I wouldn't draw the parallel. But
yeah,
seeing them the way they are, I there is a certain Like, I can look at them and think, right, so clearly there's an element of convergent evolution in your natural camouflage, because it's different colors and it's not the same. Like the patterns are not the same, but it's similar enough to think that evolution, the pressures on them, the environmental pressures on them made them evolve a similar-ish form of camouflage. But you're talking similar, like, you know, like leopard to clouded leopard or something like that. Like, it's similar.
Still quite a ways apart. Yeah.
Still different, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Hmm. Right, well, should we head out of the bamboo forest and head into the thicket that is our emails for this week?
Let's do it.
Cool.
Bing! You've got mail.
Ooh, it's an email.
Right, well, we're into our emails for this week, and obviously we've been off for the last couple of weeks, so we've not set a what's everyone been doing or blah, 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 what's everyone such and such question. But this one going out with when the episode comes out, the question will be, well, what's your wildlife or nature plans for this year? Aaron, what's yours?
I know that you and I have plans, but I don't know if we're going into them at this stage.
No.
So say no more on that. Yeah, so I'm not entirely sure. And, you know, at the end of 2022 or the start of 2023, we asked a similar question and I had delusions of grandeur that I didn't actually manage to accomplish. So I'm kind of going to keep it a bit closer to my chest. My dreams are still to do and see a lot of the things that I wanted to do and see, particularly Iberian bear and Iberian wolves and Iberian lynx in the wild. But yeah, I very much want to go out and see things, but not really sure what I'm going to do. As it is, I need to renew my passport anyway, because my freedom passport has run out and now I must get the nasty blue thing.
Fair enough. Well, I'm going to say my ambition is to go swimming with blue sharks this year.
Yes, that would be cool.
I want
yes.
that to happen. And the other one that I really want to try and do, and I've been trying to do this for a couple of years now, is go and see the black grouse lekking up in
North. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, determined to do that this year. It's one of those ones that it's a little bit of a distance to go to, and then it's getting up at stupid o'clock in the morning, so that's just the sun's coming up. But no, I'm determined. This year, it's going to happen. We will try and film it, and it will go better than our attempts on fossil hunting and my attempts at fox spotting and all these other ones that... I mean, if there was an award for how to badly spot wildlife, I think I've got to be up there, you know, with any other nominee out there to claim that prize.
To be fair to you and to us, though, we've not done much filming, and that New Year one was our first kind of foray into it. So
it kind of worked, it kind of didn't, yeah.
Yeah, we need to work on a couple of things. I think we talked about audio quality, didn't we, that needed work. That probably is an argument for using the money from our Patreon supporters to get mic pieces.
Well, that was a mic setup, lapel mic on myself, but evidently it didn't seem to record, or it didn't like it, or whatever happened, and it recorded inside of my bag. For the entire I know it's very odd. I may as well not have been wearing a microphone at all.
Yeah, but,
that's the way the mop flops, I suppose. Well, you too, dear listener, can let us know what your plans are, what your ambitions are for this year when it comes to wildlife, and let's make 2024 the year of wildlife. Why not? Let's get out there and go absolutely crazy. And you can get in contact with us when that goes up on our Facebook page. You can get in contact with us in a variety of different ways, whether it's our Facebook, Twitter, or our Instagram. You can also email us as well, which I think, Aaron, we have an email.
We do. Well, actually, it's a Twitter correspondence. And this one actually comes to us from a long-time listener of the podcast who we haven't heard from for a little while, Dan Luisietti. Now, if you remember, he was getting ready for a wedding. He made that clear to us through a couple of questions that he asked us a little while ago. But Dan's back. Really happy to hear from you, Dan. And Dan says in his first message to us, sorry, I've not been in touch for ages, been busy with wedding and life in general. Question, what animal would be better to pull Santa's sleigh? So I'm going to let you answer that one first, Gareth.
Well, I mean, it depends if you want something that's got power to it, don't you? Or whether it's thematic. Power-wise, bison would be pretty good for pulling it, I think.
Yeah, damn.
But for thematic, as I think I've alluded to before, there is the six white boomers from Australia, which are kangaroos pulling Santa's sled. So that's a very Australian Santa. Then you could tailor it to whatever animal from whatever country you'd want. But I did see a really fun thing on a Lego build that someone had done where they'd made a pirate Santa and he's being pulled by Lego sharks.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's
I think it's kind of whatever you want. But if you're going for raw power, I think to stick with an animal that likes the cold as well, it's either going to be something like polar bears or it's going to be bison or something along those lines.
Do you know what? I said damn because I was banking on you going the Antipodean route and vouching for your ruse, going with the kangaroos. But I was going to go with bison because obviously, to be honest, when it comes to the Santa mythos, I'm very much a traditionalist with Santa. He has eight reindeer. And I like that imagery, but I would have gone with bison as well. And there's actually this kind of, it's a really rubbish horror film, slasher film, I should say, with Bill Goldberg from WCW and WWF. He plays Santa, who is the son of Satan. And the only reason he's nice for a millennium is because he lost the game of curling against an angel. He lost a wager based on this game.
Canadian-sounding thing ever, surely.
He has to be nice to people at Christmas for 1,000 years. And this film coincides with when, like, it's the first year of him being able to go on his killing spree again. It's called Santa's Sleigh, but spelled S-L-A-Y. And he has a bison in that. And I thought that was cool. So I was going to go with bison. But since you went with bison, and I don't really want to go with reindeer, because even though that is what I would choose, I'm going to stick to the traditional eight. And I'm going to go with eight Komodo dragons.
Yeah, they've got a bit of power to them. Yeah, that's not a bad one.
Yeah, and if you're naughty, you don't get cold, you get bitten.
Santa knows where you are because he can sniff you out. Yeah,
he sees you when you're sleeping. I always remember with quite a lot of fondness. I know that Drew hates this game. You have a love-hate relationship with this game, and I have a love-hate relationship with this game, but it's more love than hate, even though I do really hate some of it. And that's Ark. And at Christmas on Ark, you'll hear ho 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 every day at midnight, ho ho ho, and you look up in the sky and there's a sleigh being pulled by six megaloceros, you know, the Irish elk. And driving that sleigh is good old Raptor Claws. It's a velociraptor with a Santa's hat, and he drops little care packages across the map that you can go and collect. I remember that with fondness. So that answers that question. He did send another one saying to us, Happy Christmas, boys. As zookeepers, did your animals know something was up around Christmas? Did they get in the festive spirit?
I don't think so. I don't think they ever really sort of were too concerned. They probably thought it's a bit odd. Everyone's rushed in, thrown stuff in and got out as quickly as possible. But I don't think any of the animals thought any different whatsoever.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it happened regularly enough for them to even recognize like a pattern or anything. Yeah. I really don't think they noticed much. I think some of the more intelligent animals might notice that we're missing for half the day. But that's it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't gonna, because I've already answered Dan on this one on X or Twitter, sorry. So I wasn't gonna tackle this one, but I do think it's actually worth saying something brief. His third one was that he brings up the fact that we didn't have a quiz for New Year this year.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to, if it's okay with you, Gareth, I just wanted to briefly say that, yeah, we didn't have a quiz this year because we didn't really know how to tackle it with just the two of us, and whether we bring Drew on for that or just let him enjoy his festive season. However, we have had a talk about it, and don't stress, something there will be happening. One.
There will be something.
Yes. So, yeah, we'll keep you posted on that as that develops. But yeah, thank you very much for your free messages, Dan. I hope you've enjoyed the answers. We've enjoyed hearing from you again. And again, I think we said it before, but again, congratulations on your wedding. That's really cool. I hope you and your wife now had a fantastic day. And I hope you tell us all about it when you get the chance.
Indeed. Right. Well, we'll go from messages that we've had from our listeners, ways that you can support the podcast. As we were just saying, there's lots of different ways that you can do that. One of the specific ways that you can help the podcast out is by becoming a Patreon member. And that allows us to be able to go out and do a variety of different things, whether it's, well, badly attempting to do a recording on a beach and it failing absolutely spectacularly.
We will get better at it, though. We'll do some dry practice runs.
Are massively important to us and have helped us out a massive amount. So, Aaron, who are our Patreons?
I just want to wish a happy new year and a very heartfelt thank you very much to Chelsea McKee, Connie P, Jen Greenhall, and Fogtober. Thank you very much, guys, for your continued support.
Definitely. And of course, there are other ways that you can help the podcast out. There's a couple of different avenues that you can go down. You can like, subscribe, tell a friend, tell anyone or an enemy about us. Go and tell a giant panda. They probably won't be massively interested or move very much, but that's just their own lifestyle. Because sharing us and sharing word of mouth is really important to obviously getting people to know that we even exist out there. Mm-hmm. And you can do that in a multitude of different ways on whatever podcasting service you're listening to us on. Leave a review, like and subscribe, interact with us on social media, or you can go to our fantastic T-Mill store, which I've neglected to actually bring up for a while. There is a variety of new different t-shirts that are up on there. Drew has been tinkering with that in the background. We've got the 2023 roster shirt that has gone up there now. So you could, in theory, if you wanted to, you could go and get all three t-shirts that have got all the 3 years that we've been around on them. And I think they would make quite nice shirts. And I think we're working on trying to compile them all into one massive collection of animals at some point to do.
I was playing about on an app on the laptop the other day. And I think that those three roster photo, the free roster artworks actually mm-hmm. make better mugs than the singular species designs do.
Oh, well, maybe
there's an idea. If you want to, I don't know if you can get mugs on our shop yet, but if you can, that's the design to go for. I say
it's certainly something we were looking at. I think the potential is there. So I will speak to Drew about that, and potentially there may be mugs coming out in the future.
I do want to say as well, like, space. I do want to say, before we thank our listeners, I did just want to shout out Drew, actually, because Drew, like, as you know, he took a step down from being in front of a microphone, but he continues to do the artwork for us, and it continues to be at his normal high standard. He does put the effort in, and
that bracketing of whose favorite artwork is going to be, you know, whose artwork is going to be their favorite one. So we're narrowing that down quite a bit, and we should be into the last couple.
Who's your favorite to win the whole thing?
Oh, that's a good question, actually.
Who's left in it as well? I can't remember who's left in it. I did have a look earlier on. And
okay, so currently we have the Genet, the Lystrosaurus. We have the Ichthyosaur and the Pangolin. Microraptor and Tardigrade. Tardigrade, I still don't get how that one keeps out competing everything else.
Do you know what? I'm not so sure. I mean, this is nothing against Drew's artwork, because like I just said, Drew's artwork is fantastic. But I don't think it, with the Tardigrade, I don't think people are voting on the artwork. I think they're voting on the fact on the species itself. Yeah. I think we underestimated the popularity of tardigrades, so I'm really happy that I got to do that one. It was out of my realm of expertise.
There's one or two others that I can't say yet whether they've won or not. Because
of course, yeah. Through.
But yeah, we're looking at it coming down to just a few of them within
is not a bias at all, but I'm surprised that Snow Leopard and Painted Dog aren't in there because
didn't include them in there because I'd started just before you did that episode. Okay,
I was going to say because Drew, I mean, like I said, Drew's artwork's fantastic, but those two looked really good. I really
they did.
Those
ones. I had to have a bit of a cut off somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
But
of course.
I could throw them in as a wild card if the numbers don't match up. So I will watch this space.
Oh yeah, you didn't. So out of the ones that you have just named, so not including the two that you can't name at this stage, out of the ones that you have just named, which are your favorite? Which one's your favorite to win?
If I had to pick out of that lot, it's either going to be the pangolin or the genet.
Oh, okay.
Personally, when the genet was up against the smilodon, I thought the smilodon was the better picture than the pangolin, but that's just the way it went. Anyway, so that's one of the many, many ways that you can help us out by interacting with us on social media and all the other ones that I've just mentioned. Which pretty much brings us to the end of this episode. So
yes, it does.
A big thank you for being here, Aaron.
Pleasure.
I'm absolutely sick as a dog.
Well, it's been very nice to interact with you because to record again. It's been nice to be back doing this.
Yeah, and hopefully by this point next week I'll be a little healthier and a bit more energetic, but at the moment I'm using all the energy I have to be able to do what I'm doing at the moment. And a big thank you to you at home for listening, and we'll see you next time here in the Natural History Cupboard. Bye.
Bye. It's pandemonium.